Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Ariel Weiss, who is an Alexander Technique teacher of over 20 years' experience, who teaches in the Philadelphia area. And in addition to being an Alexander Technique teacher, she has a career as a dancer and a choreographer, and she spent many years dancing, doing choreography. She has a background in also in improvisation, Tai Chi, Laban movement analysis, many aspects of dance and theater. And we're going to talk today about how the Alexander Technique can be useful for dancers. Ariel, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Robert. Happy to be here.
Ariel, could you begin by giving our listeners a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Sure. The Alexander Technique is a study of human coordination. And really, it's about liberating our most efficient and graceful coordination by learning how to reduce straining patterns of interference that we've gotten to do habitually without noticing.
Mm-hmm. So it's for anybody, but specifically for dancers.
Yes.
How would that apply to dancers?
Well, I'll tell you, as a young dancer, the thing that got my attention and kind of hooked me into studying this work for the next 35 years is that an Alexander teacher showed me how to gently balance my head on top of my spine in a way that I was able to balance on one leg with much more success. So here I was as a young dancer working terribly hard to balance on leg, which for some reason dancers are very keen on. And in essence, what I was doing with my misuse was throwing myself off balance. And so what I mean to say is it didn't work very well. Mm-hmm. And this little tiny adjustment and thinking about it in a wholly different way actually worked much better. It surprised me. It surprised me that it would work better.
Mm. Well, I know nothing about dance, but I assume that it is useful to be able to stand on one foot, right? And be balanced as a dancer.
Yes.
And because you're, yeah, and I would speculate that your earlier attempts to stand on one leg, and as you said, you tried very hard. And I'm guessing that trying was simply exaggerating whatever old patterns you had built into you at that time or that you had adopted. You simply exaggerated them a bit, right?
Oh, I exaggerated them quite a bit.
Quite a bit. And it led to was a sort of a stiffening, but not necessarily a very successful being on one foot in any kind of a graceful way.
That's correct. I think in general, not that all dancers are the same and not that all dance styles are the same, but I think there is a theme of just overdoing it. It's certainly what Marge Barstow used to encourage me to pay attention to in my own dancing, that this working too hard, this only knowing how to put more effort into something and really not understanding a more nuanced approach to my own movement. An awful lot of dance training, and again, not to say that all dance training really is the same, but an awful lot of dance training is done by demonstration visually.
Mm-hmm.
And in ballet, of course, there's a verbal language that something actually they can say a whole phrase verbally and they don't even have to show it in demonstration visually.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that it's kind of an external form that you're trying to fit into. And then you add to that the fact that most dance studios have at least one wall of mirrors. So mm-hmm. it's a lot about a very external observation of yourself. And so, unfortunately, much of dance training is not getting dancers to kind of sense their own movements kinesthetically. And that, I think, is a great disservice because you add on to that, if something isn't working well, they tend to just work harder and use more and more effort. Specifically in dance training, I think this is best illustrated when you see a dancer kind of able to achieve a certain postural alignment for good dance technique at what we call center floor or at the bar, where they're stationary. And then that same dancer goes to locomote across the floor, and it all disappears, and there's no kind of good line or organization because the strategy they were employing to get that line was to use every muscle in them just as hard as they knew how, and they can't do that and then free their limbs to locomote across the floor.
Yeah, I can see that. So you might succeed in holding a certain posture, although you'll do it at quite a cost to yourself. But that, as you say, will break down when you try to actually move through space.
Right, which is mostly what dancing is,
Yeah, that's
moving through space.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's interesting that you, I didn't actually know that about dance, that is, but it makes sense that a major way of learning a particular dance movement would be to watch a teacher or an experienced dancer do it, and then you would, in a
Yes.
sense, mimic that, right?
Correct.
But what you're mimicking is not the thing that maybe you should be mimicking. And let's say, I mean, I'm kind of talking off the top of my head here, but let's say you had a really good dancer who moved really well, and
Yes.
you were attempting to mimic their movements, but you're mimicking the end result of something that's going on, starting with their thinking, and they may be organizing themselves very well in movement, but you're kind of latching on to that end thing, which might is if you want to get it, you're going to try to get it within your own ability to coordinate yourself, and that might not work very well.
That's correct.
Is that a fair way of putting it?
Well, it is, but also that when you learn through mimicry, what you also mimic is people's bad use patterns.
Well, that's I'm not I haven't even got there yet, but I'm talking about, let's say, a really good dancer who has very good use, as in Alexander terms. That is, they
Yes.
move very gracefully, they don't put a lot of unnecessary effort into what they're doing, and you mimic that. You're kind of going for their end product without having gone through whatever process they've used to get there, or they may not have gone through much of a process. They may not have, they may be somebody who has not learned how to mess themselves up in the first place. Say a Fred Astaire, for example, who
Or
I,
Mikhail Baryshnikov.
yeah, exactly.
Yes.
There are people out there in the world who never really developed a lot of harmful patterns of movement, and I mean, the one I know the best is Fred Astaire, just from his movies. But I could imagine that if you observed him in movies and you thought, boy, I'd sure like to move like that, I'm going to attempt to mimic how he moved, I don't think that would get you very far.
It might.
It might. I mean, I think if you just watched it without trying anything, you might get something out of it. But I think if you watched him and attempted to duplicate his movements or to mimic him, I kind of doubt that that would work very well. I think
Well,
just
it.
hanging around him or vi watching him might be useful. It's tricky. I don't know the exact answer to that. But then, as you said, the other problem is that you might have a teacher who has some misuse patterns, and if you're mimicking them, you're very likely to include in that final product whatever misuse patterns they have.
Yes, and so we've passed down these misuse patterns, unfortunately, mm-hmm. onto many generations of dancers. Mm-hmm. And what I try to talk to dancers about is that they need to understand their own habitual patterns so that when a teacher makes a correction, that they're not stuck in a trap of constantly overcorrecting and over-efforting, mm-hmm. but that they have a larger understanding contextually of their own best use of functioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for instance, in yep. dance technique, much of the time, there's a great deal about keeping one's shoulders down. And we don't like to see shoulders rising towards the ears so much. It's not a very nice line in most dance techniques and not considered the thing we're after. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, one habit of misuse that gets quite readily adopted and reinforced is that dancers often pull with great vehemence their scapulae down their backs in a way that immobilizes them and unfortunately restricts movement, restricts kind of graceful line, mm-hmm. and puts a great strain on their neck and back and shoulders.
So they're trying to correct one problem by introducing a corrective pattern or movement.
Yes.
To fight
as
it.
I like to say, they've added a pull to a push or
exactly.
a push to a pull.
Exactly. And that is in total contradistinction, I guess is the word, to the Alexander approach, which would be, oh, you're pulling that if your primary habit is to lift your shoulders, why not just stop doing that instead of fighting it? Because then you're going to end up with two habits that are, as you say, pulling and pushing at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think before we bring the conversation to a close, I think it would be useful if you could say a little bit about how you, as an Alexander teacher, would work with a dancer who came to you for lessons, say for a first lesson, has no idea what this work is about, but they've heard it could be helpful. How do you approach someone like that as a teacher?
Well, I'm trying to think. I just gave a workshop last week. I went to the School of Dance at the University of the Arts. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the students about understanding that movement really happens quite cohesively in their whole bodies. And that while dance technique often speaks very specifically to a certain location, corrections are made to shoulders, corrections are made to your pelvis, corrections are made to your knees, that if they understand this primary pattern, their spine wants to follow in good sequence. Yes, when they let their skull have a nice poise on top of their spine, that their whole movement will be much better organized. So the first thing I try to tell and get dancers to pay attention to is a kind of a larger picture. We have a strong tendency to think of ourselves very piecemeal. It's part of our training. And so kind of bringing the attention back to a more cohesive whole, because that's really what makes movement so beautiful and captivating to watch.
Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I mean, would you talk about their head-neck relationships, for example, as an example of that?
Yes.
And I mean, I'm thinking in terms of what you just said, dancers have a number of specific things they need to do to dance in the way they want to dance. But if you want to change the overall pattern of how they do those things, you need to intervene, as it were, somewhere that's going to have a whole body effect in order for all those individual things to be carried out more easily and of course, Alexander teachers love the neck as the intervention point for all kinds of very good reasons,
yes,
biomechanical and others. But so basically, it sounds like you're saying, well, you have these dance skills, but you don't want to kind of, in order to carry those skills out, there has to be a good overall organization of your body.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't want to override that good use and functioning in the name of dance technique. It will not bring you better dance technique.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And maybe it might be useful just to say a word or two about, I mean, if we think of the three main groups of performers that come for Alexander lessons, and I guess they'd be musicians, actors, and dancers. I know in my own personal teaching experience, I don't work a lot with dancers. I work a lot mm-hmm. with musicians and a fair amount with actors. And I have to say, I personally, as an Alexander teacher, find it a little difficult sometimes working with dancers because it's my impression, and I may be wrong about this, that they tend to, there tends to be some ideas about how they should present themselves on stage that are almost an aesthetic, that are a bit, you know, a little arching of their lower backs,
oh,
that
yes.
kind of thing. And so, you know, with a musician, let's say, who has mm-hmm. back pain while they're playing in an orchestra, and you can show the musician an easier way to sit and play, a lot of times they're going to be totally fine with that. You know, they mm-hmm. don't have a lot invested in that. And, oh, this is an easier way to sit, and I'm playing the violin better. I'm down with that. Whereas for an actor, I'm not an actor, a dancer.
Yes.
Wow,
it's much more threatening,
Robert. You're
kind
of tampering. You're tampering with some stuff that is a little trickier. And
the dancer has much more invested in what those movement patterns feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take away that feeling, mm-hmm. even if that feeling is causing them to be injured, which unfortunately happens commonly.
A lot, yes.
The statistics on dancer injuries is astounding.
Yeah, I know that.
It's astounding. But you see, there's been a commitment to that feeling for a dancer, because they think it's helping them achieve what it is they're after, whether that is balancing more successfully on one leg, whether that's being able to turn more revolutions in their turn, jump higher. If you can show a dancer that by attending to their best use and functioning, they will achieve that goal more readily, then you have their attention, and then they might be willing to relinquish that commitment to that faulty sensory appreciation, as Alexander would have called it.
Yeah, maybe you should just say a word or two more about that before, because when you're talking about feelings, you're talking about physical sensations, what it feels like to stand or move
yes.
a certain way.
Yes.
And one of Alexander's big, big discoveries was that our feelings are often very unreliable guides to what the reality of the situation is. And of course, he discovered that on himself. And of course, it's been rediscovered many times since then. And I'm curious how you would approach a dancer about that. What would you say to them that would help them to understand that? As you say, they have a lot invested in their feelings.
Yes.
What's your approach to that?
Well, my approach, first of all, I think this is one instance where teaching in a group is terrifically helpful.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, dancers most often study in groups. So they're used to kind of watching each other and learning mm-hmm. From others. And again, if someone can suspend their kind of belief system for a moment and dare to do something unhabitual.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in the room can see that their leg went up higher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then that's going to make a larger impression than anything else.
More than anything you say to them.
Correct.
Yes.
What
okay.
I like to tell my students is, please don't believe me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Find out if
verify true. Independently. Verify. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to say, maybe to a dancer or a dance student who's listening to this and thinks, well, maybe the Alexander technique would be something to explore, but they're kind of on the fence a little bit. You want to kind of give them a final note of encouragement?
Well, I would like to talk about that the idea of liberating ourselves, you know, excessive work that is misdirected is actually strain. And so dancing requires an awful lot of work, and it's glorious work. Mm-hmm. And when we actually direct that work in a direction that's clearly helping us succeed, then what it does is it helps us enjoy what we're doing more. And that's a wonderful thing, because then what we're doing is we're helping to prevent injury.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're increasing our skill level, we're increasing our expressiveness and our own enjoyment, and that's always a good thing.
Well, I think that's a great place to bring our conversation to a close. My guest today has been Ariel Weiss, an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in Philadelphia, has an extensive background in movement and dance. If anything that we've been talking about intrigues you and you live in the Philadelphia area, contact her. We'll put a link to her website by the interview. And if you live anywhere else in the country, we'll also put or the world for that matter, we'll also put a link to a site where you can find a teacher, in an Alexander teacher in your area. Ariel, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Robert.